On this episode of Let's Get Frank, meet Desert Frank. He's a teacher based in Saudi Arabia. He's 52, loves laughter, diving, beer, women, bacon, Legos, and travel. He presents a podcast with a fellow teacher. He says his dating life has come and gone with the country he's in. He's never dated anyone longer than 2 years and never more than one at a time. He's also taught in 7 countries since 2001. He's an old school romantic and believes in serendipity. Is he the Frank that BB's been looking for? Find out in this episode of Let's Get Frank.
Annabelle, Miss Annabelle Knight, I've missed you, our resident sex relationship dating coach, who's also a best-selling author and TV presenter with a range of sex toys. Excuse me, Annabelle, how have you been?
I've been really good. How have you been?
Yes, I've been okay. Rona keeps knocking back on my buoyant door. She's so I don't know what that meant. She's so
persistent.
Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
I've heard you can get like a few days where you think, yeah, I'm totally over it, and then day four, yeah, you're like, oh god, I'm dying.
My new one is tingles, which actually isn't that unpleasant, I can't lie. It's that whole thing of like, you know, sitting on your hand and pretending it's someone else.
And it's like pins and needles.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry to bring that down, everyone. I need you to be brave for me today. Do you promise?
I'm always brave for you.
Well, today especially, because I don't know how to say this. Sure, I've got another date, but it's my final date.
Oh.
I know.
It's the end of an era.
It's the end of something. Before you give me advice about this week's Frank, he sounds great. Can I ask you about, because I'm wondering if I'm suffering from this, I fear I might be, dating fatigue.
I wouldn't be surprised if you are. You've done a lot of dating in a short space of time. It is not the usual way. I don't think people tend to have a huge avalanche of dates with men of the same name in a very short space of time. So I'm not surprised you're a little fatigued by it, but we're just going to, you know, power through, really take a deep breath and leap into this date with all the enthusiasm that this Frank deserves, which is some.
No, which is lots. No, which is lots.
I was going to say which is lots, but then I don't know this Frank. I don't know.
Oh no, he sounds good.
I think anyway, best foot forward is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, and I have to apologize to Frank beforehand because, and this is the dating fatigue showing its ugly head. Annabelle, we're lucky I've had a shower. So I've got no makeup on. I'm ruddy-faced. I'm without makeup. I'm just like looking a little bit glowing because I put some SPF on. That's all right, isn't it?
I think this is fine. It's early morning. I think if you were, you know, dressed to the nines with a face full of slap, it might be a little bit too much for the time of day. So I think you are appropriately facially attired for the time.
Thank you. Let me tell you about Frank. So he's 52, same age as me-ish, so that's kind of good. Presents a podcast, which I like, because that's something in common. And is it a cliche to say that it's really important to have common interests, or is
no.
it more about common ideals and politics? Oh, you think it's really important?
I think, you know, everything overlaps. And I think common interests, common ideals, you don't have to be a carbon cutout of, you know, your partner to get on well. They do say opposites attract, but you do need some common ground. There has to be something that bonds you. And if that is that you both enjoy the presenting side of life, that actually means you've probably got quite similar elements of your personality that lend itself to doing a podcast or being a journalist and, you know, the confidence side of it. So I think it's more than just, oh, he does a podcast and I do a podcast. It's what that represents.
Yeah, I like this. He's a teacher. He's an American teacher. I've got Paula Abdul in my head now. He's an American teacher living in Saudi Arabia. So he loves to travel. This is, okay, I'm going to tell you something about him and then I'm going to ask you what you think I'm thinking. So he says his, what's it like going into my brain? When you do that, is it a leap for you?
It's a bit
is
of
it an
leap,
ugly
yeah.
leap?
It's a lovely leap.
Is it?
Yeah, it's great.
Right, so he says his dating life has come and gone with the country he's in. Right, and he's taught in 7 countries since 2001. He's never dated for longer than 2 years. So what do you think I'm thinking?
You're thinking he has issues surrounding commitment, and that means that he moves around a lot and doesn't stay in the same place long enough to have a long relationship. So he kind of creates his own barriers.
Or he's on the run. But I think what you're saying is true.
Or he's a criminal.
He's a crim. But yeah, I mean, and you can look at my background as well and say that I'm a commitment phobe. And we've talked about this before, because I kind of don't think I am. I think I want commitment, but there's reasons why I found that hard to actually go for. But then it could be the same for him, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think being able to see a potential point of view from the other side of the coin is really important. And, you know, you've just said, we've talked about it before, it could come across on paper that you're like afraid of commitment, or you don't want it deep down, when we know that's not true. So really, it's about getting to know that person, delving deeper into their, you know, world and learning how they communicate and what their emotional stance is. And then you can make your decision.
Is it a red flag, though, for someone to not dated longer than 2 years?
Again, I mean, it could be. Absolutely, it could be. But you have to judge each person on their individual merit. And if we start kind of blanket saying anyone who hasn't been in a relationship for more than 2 years is, you know, off the table, that is potentially pushing the entire swathe of eligible potential partners to one side, making your pool smaller. So I would say always give someone a chance and get to know them and see, you know, it may just be as simple as they just haven't met the right person.
I love this. I love how your brain works with this. You are such romantic. Here's something else about today's Frank. He says he's alone, but not lonely. And I quite like that. I mean, A, you could say that's what someone who's lonely would say. But there's a kind of an acceptance there. And do you think, so this is kind of going against the whole premise of the podcast, but tell me what you think. Do you think that some people will always be on their own? And actually that's okay. And actually there's some kind of relief in accepting that, not trying to have the relationships that we feel we should have, because then you could just have flings and just have sex and just put your mind somewhere else. Do you know what I mean? Are some people just not cut out for relationships, and we should maybe look out, you know, we should maybe see that as an option?
I think there's kind of two answers to that that stem from the same place. Yes, definitely people can be absolutely 100% happy and content on their own and not need someone in their lives to live with or marry or have babies with or whatever people want to do. Wow. That's a really interesting question, because I am, as you said before, quite rightly, I am a romantic. And because I personally don't think I would be happy forever and a day being on my own, there's a part of me that's going, oh, I think everyone would probably feel happier with someone. Mm. But then I know so many people that aren't and are genuinely happy. So maybe that says more about me than it does them. But yeah, I do think people could definitely be on their own and get everything they need from their friends, from their family members, from other relationships. You just, instead of getting all of those positive things from one person, you get them from many people. And that's probably healthier in the long run, because if someone lets you down, you've still got a variety of people to fall back on.
It feels less risky, and it feels more, in the kind of parlance of today, self-lovey, in that you're actually concentrating on you.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a kind of a societal message that you meet someone, you move in with them, you get married, then you have babies, and then they do exactly the same thing you did, and then you become grandparents, and then you die happy. And that's the kind of old-fashioned message that we get. I mean, you still see that today. You only have to watch a random TV show or listen to a song or read a book, and those messages and those stories are still perpetuated. And what's good is that the other side of the coin's messages are now being put out there, where we are seeing in mainstream media lots of stories about happy, contented, successful individuals that aren't coupling up unnecessarily.
You mentioned monogamy. Do you think monogamy is natural?
Do I think monogamy is natural? I mean, I think it entirely depends on the person you are talking to and the person that they are with, because monogamy for me feels very natural. I'm not fighting an urge to be with other people or to create other romantic links or relationships. But I know that there are people out there that do have that fight. So I think the question is it natural for you?
Does Matt know about your feelings towards me?
I mean, he'd be hard pushed not to, because I've got lots of posters of you in our room. There's one above our bed.
God. Well, I wanted to above my bed. So I've got, my parents hated me, as we've established, and they had a photo taken that they had then made into a painting. I can't even tell you about this. Well, and yet here I am doing
it. Is this a true story?
This is a true story. And it's a picture of me and three of my siblings. And there's big age gaps between us. So I look like a giant behind John Martin and Yasmin. So they're all sitting looking really cute with their hands on their laps in the same position. They've all got matching cardigans on because they've been told to sit in this position. And I'm behind with a Farrah Fawcett hairdo that's dropped. So it's sticking to my scalp and then flip. And I was an ugly teen. So it's really an absolutely challenging picture that my parents had in every home of theirs. Now I've now got it in this flat. And I feel, you know, you've let me down with the litmus test. You know, you haven't bothered to design the litmus test.
That, yeah,
you
know, I just fell by the wayside.
Yeah, the man licks it. And if it goes purple, I think was the colour we decided, or red, they're the one for me. So thank you so much for your hard work there. But what I thought another litmus test would be to put that portrait of me above my bed. And if a man can maintain an erection... He's the
one.
Oh
my goodness.
What do you think?
I mean, I'd be concerned if a man could maintain an erection looking at a picture of children. That's red flags for me.
Oh, well, you've ruined that for me.
I mean, you should have ruined it for yourself.
Oh, I'm going to send you the picture. You and Matt will enjoy it thoroughly, I think. So look, as it's as it's our final date, I guess I should ask you to remind us of your top three dating tips for anyone trying to find love.
Okay, my top three dating tips. The first one would be, you know, leave your baggage at the door. This is a date with a new person and you should treat it as you've just flipped over a page in a book. It's an entirely new story. It's good to acknowledge your baggage and not to ignore it, but we glance back, we do not stare. So that's tip number one. Tip number two is, regardless of, you know, how you identify, who you go to bed with, or what's between your legs, make a little bit of an effort. Not necessarily for the person you're meeting, although that does have some benefits in itself, but for yourself, make sure you are going into that date feeling $1 million. If you value yourself, someone else will value you as well. And dating tip number three is, it's a bit of a internal one. It is to stare at yourself in the mirror, make eye contact with yourself before you go on that date, and say to yourself at least three positive things that you think you will bring to a relationship. And that could be absolutely anything. It could be, I am a really kind person. It could be, I have fantastic hair. Whatever you think is a positive about yourself, say it to yourself, look yourself in the eye, and you will get a little rush of serotonin, which is a feel-good chemical. So you'll feel great in yourself. And that is just a little confidence tip so you can go into the date feeling your best self and knowing that you deserve love.
I genuinely love that. I'd feel so awkward doing the third one, and it actually releases serotonin.
Yes, absolutely. In fact, we've spoken about Madame Storm before. Madame Storm is a fantastic kind of power confidence expert. And that's one of her tips, which I have done for a really long time. Make eye contact with yourself and tell yourself some amazing things about yourself and you'll feel great.
This is it. I'm ready. Right. I'm ready now. And I'm not even joking.
Okay.
I promise you, I'm totally going to get the second date.
I believe in you.
Hi, Greg.
Hi. Who? Phoebe? Hi,
Bebe.
Bebe, how are you?
How are you doing?
I'm Frank, actually.
Good. How are you? Yeah,
you can call me Greg. Call me Frank, though.
I am going to call you Frank. What's the picture behind you?
I have absolutely no idea. It's something that was picked.
It's two women on a kind of pole vault.
Are they really?
Frank.
I have no idea.
That's quite specialist, Frank.
Oh, you know what it is? It was... an edit that I had to do for somebody. Let me go ahead and change that. I had no idea.
No, keep it. I love it.
You're like, it's all about pole vaulting today. Welcome to the pole vaulting podcast with Frank
finally
and Bebe. How long have you been pole vaulting, BB?
not long enough. This is actually my first time, Frank, and I like that you're here to support me. I think it's very moving. This is going to be quite a religious moment for both of us, I think. I have a bad back and a dodgy shoulder, so anything could happen, and I hope you've got a contingency plan.
Oh, I certainly do. I do.
Put some music on if I break.
All right.
Hey, Frank, how are you?
I'm great. Hey, where are you anyway? I didn't look at any of the information. So this is like fresh for me.
This is good. This is a good best way. I'm best served fresh. I don't even know what that meant. I'm in Hove, which is near Brighton, which is a city on the south coast of England. So about 50 miles from London.
Okay.
And I'm on the seaside. So it's kind of nice. And you're in Saudi Arabia.
Well, yeah, I don't like to tell people that. I usually, when I do podcasting, I just tell them I'm somewhere in the Middle East. Otherwise, they ask me for oil. You know.
Oh, God, don't start that.
No, they do. They're like, what are the gas prices? What's it like? Do they behead people? All this other kind of stuff. And I don't like to get into those conversations.
So how are you in the Middle East?
How am I in the... I'm doing great in the Middle East. I know what you mean. I'm just joking. No, I'm here as a teacher. I'm a world educator. I'm a traveler. I teach elementary school, the little bambinos. And I don't look like a kindergarten teacher or a three-year-old teacher, but I actually am. And I've been traveling around the world, and I landed here in Saudi Arabia. That's the quick version, the elevator version.
How long have you been there?
This is my sixth long year in Saudi Arabia, but I do love the school. That's why I'm still here. I love the school I work at. And then I leave as soon as I can and go travel. So it's pretty good money, and it's hard to leave the money, but I'm going to look for another place. 6 years.
You've got a podcast.
Yeah. It's not mine. I share it. It's the International Teacher Podcast. And it's because one of my colleagues asked me how to do podcasting. And I said, I don't know, because I'm a technology guy. He thought I knew. And we started looking into it, and down the wormhole I went. So we started, you know, learning about podcasting. And, you know, I'm a teacher. I'm sure you know lots of teachers. So teachers love to talk. So it's sort of cool. It's very weird for me to be on the other, sort of like on the other side, that I'm not recording this, right? And you're asking me questions. It's sort of weird because usually I'm the one that's hosting and interviewing people.
Oh, you're allowed to host. Host it.
I don't want to. This is more fun. I don't know what direction it goes this way.
This is more fun.
You're in charge, not me.
Never say that, Frank. podcasting is fun, isn't it? Do you love doing it?
Are you also doing podcasting?
Yeah.
Really? And what's your podcast?
This is the podcast.
Oh, this is your podcast. Oh, I didn't know that.
Didn't you? What did you think you were doing?
I'm confused. I don't know exactly what I'm doing.
You have no idea what this is about.
Not really. I've been sort of, okay. It's sort of fun not to know.
Okay.
I don't want to prepare any questions. You know, I don't want to prepare any answers. It's sort of like a off the cuff. It's real though, right?
So let me tell you then, because this might freak you out a bit.
You can freak me out if you want.
Okay.
I've seen a lot.
Okay. I'm sure you have, Frank. So I am single. And so I talked to my friend Max and said to Max, who do you see me with? Clear your mind, Max. And what's the first name that comes to your head? And the first name that came to Max's head was Frank. Frank is the name of the man I'm going to marry, according to Max. So now I'm dating. I'm having Zoom dates with people called Frank. and we're seeing how the date goes. And then I'm going to find love, Frank. How are you feeling now? A bit faint?
No, that sounds like fun. What a great idea for a podcast.
Thanks, Frank. I'm quite genius.
You are quite genius to come up with this idea. I'm fascinated. Mine is just interviewing people about what they do overseas and where they're from, like where they're calling from. You know, people call me, they're not interested in me. In fact, I'm called the single guy on the podcast. Ask me why.
Why are you called Greg the single guy?
Because I'm not married.
Am I allowed to ask the journalistic follow-up question, which is, why do you think that is?
Philosophically? Oh, it's tough because you travel the world and it's not easy. And I'm also 52 and I've got a really high bar set because my parents have been married for like 52 years. My two brothers are both married. I have the best family in the world. So to bring somebody else in, you know, besides falling in love, which is, I don't know, hasn't really happened that often. But if I was to bring someone into the family, holy cow, what a high bar, right?
But isn't that interesting? Because that works both ways. Rather than it be a barrier, you'd think that it would have inspired you so much that you would have done it. Because you've just got lovely examples of love around you.
You would think so, right?
So you know how to do it.
Yeah. But you have to find the right person, right? And it's not like I can just, you know, order a person. It's serendipity. I think it's also crossing paths. But it's hard when you travel overseas. Every 2 years or so, I've been moving for the last 20 years. And before that, long story short, I was traveling in the States all the time. And when I was a little kid, I was traveling all the time. So a Rolling Stone, you know, it's sort of like I haven't met the other Rolling Stone to roll with me. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes total sense. You kind of think if you stop traveling, then obviously you'd have more chance to put down roots and meet someone long term. But that's in your blood, isn't it? The traveling around is what you do.
There's a song by Led Zeppelin called Ramble On. And that, if you listen to the lyrics to that, you know, you're British, you probably know Led Zeppelin really well, I would hope. And Led Zeppelin's song Ramble On is perfect, right? It's just like the leaves are falling. I'm on my way. We've had a lot of drinks. I've got to go look for my princess that was stolen by Gollum, you know, except for that part, maybe. But yeah, it's it's different. It really, and that's one of the reasons. But on the other hand, the podcast, the reason I use that on the podcast is not to get women. It's more like just to show people that are overseas or thinking about going overseas as a teacher, is that they can do it as a single, or they can do it like Matt, my co-host, is the married guy. And then we have Kent, who is the co-host, which is the cat guy. He's married, but he has no kids. He has a cat. And he's also extremely funny. Funnier than me, if you can believe that. So is Matt, of course.
No,
but
stop,
you know,
it.
This is me on, this is me, Frank, you know. Do you know why they call me Frank?
Why do they call you Frank?
Well, I went over to my friend's house one day and his father-in-law was really drunk and he's like, well, Frank's here. And yet it was me, Greg. I'm like my childhood friend. I'm at his house and his in-law father called me Frank when he was really drunk. And I've been Frank for the entire family ever since then.
I love that.
So I walk into parties and I'm like, hi, I'm Frank. Right?
I love that.
I'll go into a coffee shop. They'll be like, what's your name? I'll be like, Frank. Do you give your real name at coffee shops when you go in and give your coffee?
Well, I do give my real name because it's a challenge because no one's ever managed to, you know, write it correctly. So it's BB, B-I-B-I, but I get Phoebe. The best one is B-O-B-O. Let's not comment on that. I've had, what do I get? Barbara, Bernie. Don't get BB. It's two letters repeated.
Yeah, I was going to say it's the sound of two letters. Right, two capital B's or maybe a B and a small B.
It's two letters repeated, Frank. It's not hard.
Exactly.
I love those women behind you, Frank.
Well, it's for you. I totally picked it out for you. I figured pole vaulting would be the perfect way into your life. Before we fell in love, all you'd think about is pole vaulting, right? Totally.
We'll have to have a pole vaulting theme at the wedding. What's interesting, that woman's buttocks are extraordinarily brilliant. Is it a girl? But I'm going to just say for people, so Frank's screen behind, there's a woman dressed as a doctor holding a pole vault stick. And then there looks like it's a woman behind with really pert buttocks in like sports gear. It's quite a little complex little image, isn't it? But no, it looks like you've got some girlfriends over. It's nice.
Well, the thing is that you're looking at an image that is actually a part of an edit. It's a project. Oh. Well, you lay one picture, take the background off of one picture, lay it onto another and try to composite the picture to make a joke for somebody or to sell something. I do lots of little things on the side and I've been learning how to use this photography program called Affinity. And it's just part of the things I do. I'm a technology teacher. I'm a techie. I'm a person that works with cameras and pictures and all that kind of jazz.
Well, I love what you're doing.
So you're looking
it.
At a project. Yeah, here's the techie. I didn't even know it was going to come up in the background of my meeting. I apologize to tell you the truth. Usually it's something blurred out.
Please don't apologize. It's given us a theme.
Oh, okay.
Oh, who's that? Someone message. Who is it? Is it a girl?
Probably not. I live in Saudi Arabia. It's probably a camel. No, it's the government. I have two phones. The one that's quiet is my phone. not that sociable. And the other one is my Saudi phone.
Yeah.
And the Saudi phone has beeps coming from the government like every 3 minutes, like from the interior government or from this or that.
What are they saying?
It's all in Arabic, so I don't know. I really don't. I'm not lying. I'm serious. I don't know what it means.
You could be missing something really important.
No, there's nothing important going on in my life. How could it be something important at all? No, it's absolutely not important. Something.
When the voice of God that you heard earlier was telling me about you, she said that you describe yourself as an old school romantic.
Oh, yeah.
Is that true?
Oh, yeah. Do you ever see the movie Princess Bride?
I haven't seen that.
Okay. I'll leave that then. Old school romantic, meaning I believe in love. I believe in love, but it might be serendipitous.
Oh, hang on. Is the Princess Bride the one with Mandy Patinkin?
Yes. Beautiful book. Read the book, don't you? The movie's amazing, but it started with a book, like most great, amazing things do.
Okay.
Starts with a book. I'm an old romantic because of my family, which I mentioned before. You know, I've got a lot up against me. Like, hey, you know, they've been married for 50 years. And then my brothers have been married for many years. And the longest I've ever been with a woman was 2 years, right? And that wasn't my fault either. That was her fault. So, I mean, I could have kept going on that. Maybe it was meant to be. And everything has a time and a place. And it just hasn't happened yet. And everyone's like, oh my God, I can't believe how old you're not, Greg. And I say, you're right. I'm not that old. And they can't believe it. So I'm usually 10 or 15 years older than people think. And it's wonderful, but I wear that on my sleeve because age is nothing to me. It really isn't. And I get that from my father. My father, oh, you would think he's like in his 50s or 60s or something. It's amazing. It's all from the heart.
You do look young. It's annoying, actually, Frank.
And I feel young.
Do you?
Absolutely. Do you feel young?
It depends. Sometimes I do. I think my mental age, or the age, not my mental age, but the age I feel stuck at is late 30s. That's where I kind of feel in my head. And I'm not that. But that's where my head still is, I think. Where's yours? What's your age in your head?
I'm probably around the 30s because I know I'm not in my 20s anymore. I can't keep up with the 20s. No, can't keep up with that anymore. And I wasn't grown up in my 20s either. I grew up about 10 years later than everybody else.
Did you?
I did. I still am. I still play with Legos. I don't know. People say, are you really grown up yet? And I said, definitely not.
You play with Lego?
Of course I do, but not in a bad way. I mean, I'm a teacher that I teach kids with Legos and I teach robotics and I teach lots of things like that. But I do go home and play with Legos on the weekend sometimes, but that's just because they're fun.
That's because they're fun. How do you stop the kids putting Lego up their nose?
Oh, I don't teach those little. If they put them up their nose, I usually pass them off to somebody else. I'm like, that's gross. Come on. I've seen enough of that. I ask them, what did they put up their nose?
Yeah, what's been up there today, little Johnny?
Yes.
With your parents and your siblings being such kind of great role model, what do you think their secret is? What is the secret then to getting a relationship going beyond 2 years or for a marriage to last 50 years? I mean, that's extraordinary, isn't it?
I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know, man. I mean, it might just be love at first sight. Maybe they're just, you know, serendipitous and found the right person at the right time. And I don't really know, to tell you the truth. I think my parents have just always loved each other. My brothers and their wives, they've got the right person. I have friends that have been married 3 times, so I don't know the secret at all of that. And I think it depends on the person too. If I had the right, if I knew the answer to that, you think I'd be single?
But the question is, do you want that? So you might be single because you've got the travel thing going on as well. So you've got a conflict. I don't know you and I'm analyzing you, but it's like to me, you've got the conflict. You've got this example of amazing relationships and there's a pressure with that because you've got to compete, but also you see the joy of it, but also this wanderlust.
Well, the question is, can't I have both?
Right.
And if I have to stop what I'm doing, go teach in a school in Britain for 10 years, because that's where I grew up, or Australia, or in US where I'm actually from. If I was told to go and teach in the US because I want to find a wife, I didn't get a degree in college for my MR degree. Like some people went for the MR or MRS degree. They called it, they were looking for a husband or a wife. I just live my life. And I figure if I live my life, then she's going to pop along in my life. I meet her and she's going to want me to be happy and I'll want her to be happy. So here's the other side of the story. It may be detrimental to me and not being able to find a wife because I'm overseas and traveling and rambling guy. But if I did find the person while we were overseas and she wanted to go over back home, wherever that is, and get a white picket fence and go to church and have children and stop traveling, that would be something on the table. It's not up to me anymore, because if I was in love with her, we'd have to make an agreement, right? It wasn't just up to me. So since it's just up to me right now, I'm the one making the decision. I should make what's happy for me right now.
Yeah, totally. And because you can't make decisions thinking, what if? You can't make a decision because this might happen if I don't, can you?
No, I've never moved for anybody. I've never moved anywhere for anybody else except for me. And when I've moved on and left somebody or they've left me, I haven't decided to move with them because I think that's the wrong reason to move unless it was such a strong relationship. Right. So I always sort of looked at it that way.
I think it's a miracle people get together. I really do, that they like each other. They're both on the same emotional page. They're both at the same level of available.
Yeah.
The same kind of relationship goals. I do see it as, you know, quite miraculous. You know, if me and you had a date, where would we go? What would we do?
Do I have to decide that?
Yes, you do, Frank.
Okay. So this is on me. I don't get don't to say whatever you'd like to do is not the answer. That's riding the fence. We would do something, if it was our first date, we would do something social, and it would probably be something that we, like if it was bowling or if it was something like go make something together or go somewhere, experience something that you would have never probably done before. Like maybe we'd go roller skating, you know, I don't know.
Are you trying to kill me, Frank?
I don't think I'm that brutal on the first date.
Frank wants me dead, everyone.
No, I don't think I'm that bad. You ask me, and then we'd go somewhere nice for a lunch, and then we'd go from there.
Oh, I love this date.
Oh, yeah. Well, good. There you go. How about you? What's your first date?
Yeah, I don't know. I just think drink, which is it's so bad. I think I'd be too nervous to eat in front of someone the first date. I'd be really like, oh, no.
You don't eat. That's why you don't go out to dinner and formalize, because I don't want to put any pressure on you. So if it was me deciding, we'd go, like I tell you, we'd go for lunch or something and you nitpick, you nibble at stuff. And I'd probably eat before we even went out. So I wouldn't have to just sit there and, you know, drop mustard on my shirt. Like I inevitably do, right? I inevitably do that.
I choked on a cat.
There's no pressure.
Good, because I don't want pressure. I went on a date once. And
you choked on a cat.
On a calamari.
You choked on it. I thought you said cat. And I'm like, why do you have a cat in your mouth? Were you giving it a bath?
I choked on a calamari.
On a visual. That's so funny. I'm going to think of you as the person that choked on the calamari.
No, Frank, stop it. Stop trying to kill me and stop trying to spread terrible, vicious rumors about me.
All the people that I know you mean. Yes, all the people here.
I didn't eat a cat. Everyone there, calamari? Those two women on the pole vault. Well, I did have calamari, and I haven't had it since I nearly choked on it, and the date didn't have to kind of fish it out of my mouth, but let's face it, it wasn't attractive. The whole thing that happened wasn't good.
But you survived.
I survived. Some would say tragically. I would...
Did you have to have a Heimlich or what?
No, we didn't get that far, but can you imagine? Can you imagine that on the date? Someone had to stand up behind you and kind of crush your diaphragm. Oh my God, it's mortifying.
Hasn't happened to me yet. So
I think I'd marry them just because that's happened, wouldn't you? To save the embarrassment. It's a great story.
No, because it probably wouldn't be the girl that I took out on the date. It'd probably be some hairy dude next to me that's at the at the next table going, I'm a doctor.
Ooh, are there any professions that you think you wouldn't date?
A profession that I wouldn't date? That's a tough question. I'm very open to challenges, and I think that everybody has something special, especially if you don't know about what they do. I think the first thing that comes to mind, of course, is a prostitute.
Oh, God.
I don't think I would.
Why?
I just don't think I would. That'd be a challenge, let's say that. But you asked me just off the top of my head, that'd be the first person, right?
Yeah.
a nun. I wouldn't marry a nun. No, that'd be too challenging. The date would go horribly in the beginning, and the whole way up to marriage would be just a challenge. I mean, imagine the person that you're going against is tough. More global reach.
He's a big act to follow.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. I can't think of one. I think there are so many fascinating people in so many industries, and it's almost like no matter what they do, they have stories. And if they love their job, great. If they don't love their job, I don't know what would happen. I can't hang out with negative people.
Oh, really?
So someone that doesn't like their job, I don't think I could hang out. I could marry that person if they don't like their job.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Career. Let's say, I mean, I'm older now, right? So they've been in their career. They've been at their job. Why didn't they change it? Right? Are they that stuck?
Have you always been a teacher?
No, I used to work for Bugs Bunny. I used to work in a mall.
Did you?
You're smiling, but no, I'm serious. They used to, they have the Disney stores, right?
Yeah.
We used to have Warner Brothers stores back in the 90s. There was then I graduated from college. I went working in a mall, and it was for Bugs Bunny stores. And I quickly rose up the ranks from part-time to full-time manager to store manager. And yeah, I had a fabulous time selling cartoon stuff. I love Bugs Bunny. You know, people don't know that history that I have. I've been teaching for so long. They don't know I had a career before this. So that was a short career, but that's what I did. You know, I folded t-shirts on weekends.
That's so cute.
Yeah. How about you? I haven't even heard about what you do or what you have done before, what you do now.
So I've been a journalist for 30 years. And so I write for newspapers and magazines, and I do radio shows and podcasts.
Wow.
So journalist and broadcaster, that's what I think I'm going to call myself, she says articulately. Yeah, so 30 years, long time.
Yeah. So are you all over the journalism? Like, do you write books? Do you write magazines? Just you write?
Yeah. So I haven't done a book yet, but I'm that person that's always got a book title and book notes going on, but hasn't actually sat down and done it. And I have such admiration for anyone that's written a book, because I know the commitment to it. And I just think
thank you. Incredible. Thank you very much.
Oh, have you written
a
book?
Thank you very much.
Have you written a book?
I just published one.
What's it about?
I wrote it under a pseudonym. So it's called Finding the Right Fit. And it's something I wanted to write for the last 20 years. I've never written a book before. I've only taught kids how to write for the last 20 years. And it's amazing that I finished and published a book, because I finally understand what it's like to finish something of writing, right? Not just to write it and hand it in for a grade, but to write something that's meaningful to me, that's now out there to purely share with other people, because I think it's important. And I there's a niche for it. And to answer your question, what's it about? The first half of it is a walkthrough of how to get into the career, which I'm doing, which is teaching overseas. So especially for US or British or Australian that are already first language English speakers, it's like, how do you get through one of the big job fairs for international teaching? Because there never is any information on how to do the job fair. And then the second half is all stories about living overseas. So it's on Amazon and it's on all the booksellers, and they say it's around. I think my mom has bought it so far. My mom bought one.
So I'm really pleased for you and impressed. It's such an achievement. And I always love to know, when you finished the final word, even if it was the first draft, did you have a little, light cigar, have a brandy, what was your celebration?
It wasn't. The only celebration that I had was the minute that I saw the book cover and I approved of the proof of the contents. So I celebrated once I saw it. I haven't even seen the book in print yet, because it's at my family's house in the States. My mom and dad have 25 copies. And my mom keeps saying, Greg, I can't see it. The text is too small. So I said, Mom, I sent you three different digital versions of the book, right?
Why can't you get a hard copy where you are?
Well, I'm waiting. I have to go back for a wedding in May. So I'm waiting to go back home and do that instead of sending it to myself. So it's not easy to send things here for me. I've just sort of take it for granted that it's just not easy. And I pleasantly wait to see it. But
you're going to get such a buzz out of that.
Yeah, I'll send you a picture of me holding my book if you want. I mean, that's what most authors,
yeah,
I think, they're holding the first copy of their book. But I think my mom's already given away copies, like to the nurse that was taking care of her when she was sick in the hospital. And my dad brought her the book and they gave it to the nurse. And I don't even think the nurse cared, right? So they're giving away copies of a book that maybe she'll give it to a teacher. Who knows?
Oh, I think it's brilliant. It's a brilliant idea. And it's, well done.
I think my feeling that I have of my book is probably something that you have of when you see one of your articles printed or when you see one of your published articles that you see. I think that's what I feel. I'm not sure. This is my first, right? My first foray into writing officially. I can imagine that if you're doing that a lot and you're making a living of it, that you must be going through these moments a lot of being published. And maybe it's just part of your job, but it's a wonderful feeling. Is that about right?
Yeah, it is. I mean, I guess straight at the beginning, definitely. It is a great feeling. It's which is somewhat usurped more recently by the fear of whatever you're writing, of the reaction it's going to get.
Oh,
do you know what I mean? Especially like online. So you don't quite know how something's going to go. And I think it's very interesting that you can write a 2,000 word piece and that 2,000 word piece elicits a different reaction from absolutely every single person that reads it. So you readers will bring one. We all do it. We all bring our own stuff to whatever it is we're reading. So if it's something that's maybe controversial or maybe thought provoking, you can there can be impact in the response.
So tell me about your first time that you felt that feeling. I'm published. I'm no longer just writing something. I'm published now.
Well, I was published quite soon when I did a journalism college, just a 9-month course, and got published when I was on the course. But the first piece that I did that really caused huge kind of ructions was a piece for The Guardian newspaper over here. I wrote a piece about not having children and how in this society, if you don't have children, you're seen as less and it's called pronatalism and it's worshipping the altar of parenthood, especially motherhood. And I wrote a piece about it that was definitely a raw, grief-stricken piece. And the piece was so provocative or produced such a response around the world that The Guardian did a feature the following week about the response. So that was a really proud moment because I'd written something that I wanted to say. And I think that's what I think journalism is. And I meant to every single word in it. And I thought it was, I hope, very well written. And it gave voice to a lot of people that haven't had a voice. And I got a 50-50 response. And the response from people was saying, you know, And I don't mean this in an altruistic way, but people were like pleased to have someone talk on their behalf passionately, because a lot of people, when they write about the subject, do it in a very anodyne, very polite way. And I didn't, because people don't, you know, need it to be acceptable. And I was like, no, I'm writing what I feel. And so the lovely response was really empowering and really brilliant, and it made it worthwhile. But on the other hand, Frank, the attacking response, attacking me for something I'm grieving, was devastating. Especially when it came through on social media, because I'm on Twitter a lot. You feel quite safe with it. You've got your fellow people that you kind of have the same politics and everything around you. And so when something is said nasty on Twitter and it comes to you, it feels like someone's knocked on your door, you've opened the front door and they've spat in your face. It feels vicious. Quite a heavy response to what you've just asked. But that was the first time I wrote something that I saw what the impact can be.
I wouldn't imagine a quick response or a not heartfelt response. That's why I asked you that question, because it's all about your heart, your feeling. And from what it sounds like, is that you also, what you also didn't mention is you wrote something meaningful, but you had a distinct mark on somebody's life with it. You actually affected somebody with your writing. If you had people or emotional on either side of the story, that article that you wrote that promoted another follow-up article based on the responses. That's my idea. That's what I'm saying. I don't have that yet. I have this great idea that I finished something, but you got something and it was put into The Guardian. I'm like, wow, that is the same feeling I would imagine that I have. But what I'm waiting for is what you got within that first week. Was the response, the overwhelming, whether it's on Twitter, someone saying this, you know, negative or positive, you made an impact with the writing. And that's what I'm hoping that somebody bothers to pick it up and read it, right? So with a book, it's a little bit different because it's not in a national, you know, it's not in a national publication. It's just sitting there. And it's just sitting with thousands and millions of other things that people could be doing. So I'm just hoping, and I don't like to advertise. I don't want to have to advertise anything and say, look, read my book. But if I don't let people know it's there, then until at least a few people can toot the horn for me besides mom, then how is it ever going to sell?
Yeah.
So I guess I've had to work at that. But I love this conversation because it just hit me in my life. This was like my first, I don't know, the first big waypoint in a long time. And it hit me with my job, with my career as a teacher. I mean, because I had these feelings about, wow, I know what it's like to finish something, like I told you before. But also this other accomplishment, right? A waypoint. I've done something in my life and I can check that off. Like I feel like I have written a book, not I'm writing a book like I've been saying for 20 or 30 years.
Yeah.
And then hopefully the next step is to realize somebody's going to say, you made a difference, right? And that's, I don't know, that's something I need too. You know, everybody needs a little affirmation once in a while, right? And you got it immediately with that article. That's great. And that's probably one of the reasons why you started into your career like that and stuck with it. You were successful from early on. That's wonderful. I love that.
Well, thank you very much. I hope you get that
from
the book. I hope you don't get anything negative. I hope you get, and I think it's true, isn't it? One person deciding to go into teaching abroad and knowing how in a constructive way from the book is perfect. You'll get that feedback.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Frank, look at
yeah,
us.
Yeah, you're welcome. Exactly. Well, we have things in common. That's fantastic.
Look at us being brilliant and changing people's lives.
Right. Hey, if you could travel, where would you go? Like, you can travel. Let's say I'll give you carte blanche. Here's a ticket. Where would you go for somewhere that you've always wanted to go?
This shows me how narrow my mind has become in the last few years, because I can't think of somewhere straight away. I kind of like the idea of revisiting places now I'm older. Is that a good thing to say?
First thing off the top of your head.
I want to say New York.
Just give me an answer.
I want to say New York.
Good. You got it. Why not?
Frank, are we going to New York?
It doesn't take... Well, I can't commit to that yet.
Frank!
Is that where we're getting married?
Oh my God, Frank! I do.
I'm going to Milwaukee soon, and I'd have to make some changes. But New York is one place I have never been. You know, you say that you want to go to New York. It's a hub of publication, right? My nephew is there on Broadway or off Broadway. But I have a nephew that's, yes, old enough to be on Broadway. He's amazing, amazing superstar. And we'll see him someday in the big lights. But why do you want to go to New York?
Because I have been there once before and I didn't do it properly. And I just like the idea. I don't think I experienced it in the way I wanted to experience it. And I would like to do it again. I do remember when I got there being that cliche that everyone says, but I really had that feeling that I was on a film set it seemed so familiar in an unfamiliar way because you'd seen it so many times in films and TV. And it was genuinely thrilling, like a visceral feeling of it being thrilling. But London does that to me as well. And I like the high-rise-ness of it. I like that kind of... anything could happen, adventurous. I love that energy. I know that people don't like, you know, a lot of people, that's their issue with it. That's what I like about it, that kind of danger stroke excitement of who knows. Yeah, I love it. Love it. And I couldn't, like, you know, actually seeing yellow cabs that are kind of slightly orange and the potholes with steam coming out. It's genuinely exciting.
I haven't seen the yellow cabs there. But
let's go together. I can't wait. We're going to have such a good time. You know, the wedding in Milwaukee. Is the wedding in Milwaukee?
The wedding is in Milwaukee. Yes. It's my oldest nephew. Yes. In Milwaukee.
Are you confident the marriage is going to last? What a terrible thing to ask.
Look at the history of our family. I would say yes. And he's a spitting image of his father too. He's my younger brother's oldest son. He's following in the footsteps of his father, who followed in the footsteps of my father. I mean, I love this little guy. He's awesome. He's amazing. I don't know how I fit in this family. I'm like this black sheep of the family. I show up and they're like, where's Uncle Greg? And they're like, I don't know. And I just show up.
Oh, no, they love you.
Yeah, maybe.
They love you. You're the author. You're the educator. You're the teacher. You're the author.
Yes. Yeah, that's me.
How cool is that? What are you doing the rest of the day, Frank?
I have to fix a couple of, I don't know if you edit your podcasts, but I don't do mine live. I have to edit them and make them sound better from the audio quality and take out some of the ums and uhs and buts, because it really bothers me in some of the podcasts I've heard. They don't do any editing. And some of these people that do podcasts that host them are going, and you know. I'm like, wow. So I've been more acutely aware of the conversation that goes on with my podcasting. And that takes a lot of editing, as well as to make it sound richer and like the focus, since they're not viewing it, they need to hear it, that it needs to be quality. So I'm doing that this afternoon. Short answer, I guess, right? You want it? Never get a short answer out of me. I'm going to work on my podcast for a little bit, and then I have to go to a campfire.
A campfire?
In the backyard of a neighbor of mine, a good friend of mine, my mentor, that's here. His family's away back in the States. He's having a party for a couple people to sit around a campfire in his backyard and enjoy a nice meal. So that's about the height of the excitement in Saudi Arabia here. That's it right there. That is the life. That's the New York City that I'm experiencing right now.
That's your New York. What's the food going to be? Do you know what they're cooking? That's what I'd be excited about.
He's an amazing chef. He's going to be cooking. He's got some wonderful things on the steaks on the grill and some burgers and some wonderful potatoes and things. It's going to be great.
Good. Well, I hope you send me some pictures of the food. I'm not even joking. I'm not editing. The voice of God edits. Uh-huh. The voice of God will be editing. What am I doing the rest of the day? I've got to sorting a feature. And I'm just thinking about life, Frank. I'm just organizing our wedding in my head.
Fantastic.
I'll do a first draft of the invite and I'll send it to you and you can see if you like it or not.
Whatever, you know, hey, I'm game for anything. It's a very interesting way to get married. I mean, this whole Frank thing, I love it. Why not? You know, there's a lot of us named Frank out there, right? A lot of Franks in the sea.
It's cute. <isn't> it?
I love your idea. It's a fantastic idea. Why not?
You're so cute. Oh, Frank, listen, thank you. It's been so lovely to meet you. Thank you so much for doing this.
It's been a lot of fun. I told you, I didn't know exactly, even though it was explained a little bit in the beginning, I really didn't know what I was getting into, but it's just fun to talk with you. You're easy to talk to. That's a lot of fun. Keep writing some great stuff. I hope that you really make your mark as much as you wish. And don't worry about whether or not someone thinks it's a good piece of writing. You know that if they have a response, right?
Yeah, thank you. And listen, good luck with your book. I can't wait to hear that you've had great response to it.
We'll see what happens with that. There's so many other things to worry about. Let the book just go. Let it go and do whatever it wants.
Yeah.
All right.
Let it find the people it needs to find.
Yes.
Frank, I'm going to love you and leave you.
Thank you, Bibi.
I'll see you in the church.
Or in New York, okay? Bye, Bibi.
Yeah. Bye. Hey, Annabelle, how was that date?
Oh, it was lovely, wasn't it? I think he had such a good time.
I really liked him. I really liked what he was saying about his book. And I really liked how... Did I get too heavy again?
No, I can't think help it. The conversation certainly veered towards the heavier side of things, but I don't think it was too heavy. I think you both did a really good job of kind of talking about what you were comfortable with in a way that you were comfortable doing it. So it never felt like, oh, this is getting heavy at all. It just felt really natural and like a good chat.
Like a good chat. A good chat doesn't sound sexy, Annabelle Knight.
Well, do you know what? I'm not sure, having watched you both, I'm not sure there was like an instant want to rip each other's clothes off level of attraction, but I certainly saw a bit of flirting and a bit of playfulness as the date progressed.
How do you see that then? So is that tone of voice? Is it physically? What's the body language that's giving that away?
Your nonverbal communication, so everything that you're doing rather than saying, you became a lot more relaxed. Like you physically kind of exhaled and there was like a shoulders dropped moment. But you both also kind of leaned towards the camera a bit more as the date went on, which shows me that you were, you know, getting closer, like physically getting closer to one another. So I definitely saw some potential there.
It's so interesting, isn't it? We do really need you to see it on every kind of IRL in real life date that I have. What were your main three bits of analysis?
Oh, the first one was you both had a bit of a kind of a thing for making one another laugh, not in a overtly obvious way. It was quite subtle, but it was really cute. So I liked that you both wanted each other's almost like comedy approval, like you were both trying to get those laughs and you both got them, which was lovely. The other point of analysis, which I thought was, again, quite similar to our last Frank, it was less interview, less question answer, and it was a lot more natural. It was a lot more of a chat. And the final point of analysis was you're not afraid of kind of bigger topics. So it wasn't like, oh, let's keep it surface level. You were happy to go where the conversation went. And if that meant getting a bit deep, you went a bit deep. And, you know, it was a really lovely, well-flowing conversation that you had between you.
Yeah. And it's like Irish Frank said as well. It's kind of, you know, I'm always going to do that. And if the person that I'm dating doesn't like that, they're not the person for me.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I guess it's that whole thing of you kind of set out your conversational stall in a way. I'm always going to do
that. Yeah, it's a bit of, I think it's like a conversational dance. Like you might take two steps forward, and if that person is taking two steps forward, then you're going to bump heads. It's about give and take conversationally.
Do you think it's awful that I asked if he thought his nephew's marriage would last?
I actually wrote that down. That I know this was coming from a humorous comedy place because I know you so well. But on a first day, I mean, it wasn't even that many minutes in. You were just like casting aspersions left, right and centre. But he took it all with, you know, the good humour it was intended. And he, I mean, there would have been people on this earth that would have got offended by that. And he just wasn't one of them. He was easygoing and definitely a lot of fun.
I loved what he was saying about, I'd imagine a lot of people that don't have successful relationships, the reason for that for many people is because they never saw successful relationships. They never had that example shown to them. So I found it interesting that he has had that example shown to him. And rather than that be a spur, it's almost been a barrier.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there is certainly an element of living up to, you know, your parents or the relationship that's the most influential to you, and a fear that you're not going to be able to do that. So you put obstacles in your way so that you can't do that. So instead of trying and failing, you just have never tried. One of the things I really liked about this Frank was he was really self-aware and he had quite a lot of self-worth. Like when he was talking about, you know, moving to find someone. And he was quite philosophical and saying, well, I actually am going to do what makes me happy. And if I find someone on that journey, then that's brilliant. And then if I do find someone, we can look at different elements of my life, my lifestyle. But until then, primary goal is for me to be happy with myself. And I thought that thought process was really interesting.
Yeah, really nice, really nice. And I loved what he said about his book as well, that he, you know, how lovely if it impacts on someone, how lovely if it makes a difference to someone. That's just because he obviously loves what he does.
Yeah. To be able to write an entire book about what you do, you've got to be passionate about it. And he definitely was.
You write books. What was your, because I always thought if I'd written a book, there'd be some topless action the minute I've filed it. The minute I've written the words, the end, I'd be tap dancing on a table somewhere doing something outrageous. How do you celebrate?
I cried when I wrote the end of my first book. I genuinely burst into tears because it had been such a long process and such an... I can't tell you how emotional it is. It almost feels like a bereavement when it's over.
Really?
I was really upset by saying goodbye to the characters. Yeah, so I cried.
That's so weird. So it feels like a bereavement rather than giving birth.
Yeah, I felt a loss. I mean, I'm not saying that's the same for everyone. I've typed the end and then was just like, well, what do I do now? Who do I, like I'd really enjoyed and grown. It sounds so cliche to say, you know, you grow close to your characters, but you do. For months and months and months, the characters in my book occupied like my every waking thought. It was my work. It was research. It was, you know, they were everything to me for a really long time. So when it was over, you know, I definitely celebrated when the cover came through, when I got the first copy, all those milestones. But when it was just me and my laptop and that was it and I wrote the end, yeah, I just burst into tears.
Am I featured at all in any of your books?
I'd be lying if I said yes.
Okay. I love Frank's waiting to go home to see his book with his family.
Again, so the lovely little facets of the conversation, such as that one, really shine a light on the true nature of his character, which is family is important. Shared experiences are important. You know, he could quite easily say, oh, I want, you know, the satisfaction right now, but he's delaying that gratification so that he can share it with his loved ones. And I think that's such a lovely character trait.
Really, really nice. What a lovely bloke. I'm going to ask you something, and I almost don't want to ask you because I know it irritates you, and I know actually it's more than irritation. I know it hurts your soul because you are a professional, and I know that you don't like to lessen the gift you have, but I am going to ask you anyway, what's my percentage chance of Frank dating me again, do you think?
I think Frank would 100% go on a date with you again. I think he really enjoyed your conversation, and, you know, I think he made you feel good about yourself and vice versa. I think it was a mutually lovely experience that he would definitely want to repeat.
Oh, we did good. Me and Frank did good. Can't wait for our pole vaulting wedding in New York.
I know. No, it was Milwaukee, wasn't it?
Oh, I can't remember. I can't remember.
You were getting married in Milwaukee, I'm sure.
No, he lives in Milwaukee. No, his family in Milwaukee, and he's going to a wedding in Milwaukee, but our wedding is New York. Annabelle, if you're going to not bother listening...
I wrote Milwaukee down because I was a huge Hanson fan back in the day. And they had a song called Man from Milwaukee. So I heard Milwaukee and that was it. The rest of the day ended for me at that point.
Well, that was my date with Desert Frank. I loved him. I wish him so much luck with his book. I'm sure it's brilliant. I hope he gets a fantastic response from it. Thank you so much to our brilliant dating coach, the fabulous Annabelle Knight. A huge thank you to today's wonderful Frank. And thank you for listening. Please rate, subscribe, follow, and leave us a review to help other people find us. Keep listening and join me next time for our Frank highlights. I know the best of my Franks, the best of my Annabelle, the best of me. I've been promised that section is very long indeed and certainly didn't need any editing work. See you then.
I would go on another date. Yes. She's a wonderful person. Great. Easy to talk to. And that's the most important thing.